I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. Because of the length of today's interview, the introduction is very brief. My guest, David Emerson, was diagnosed with multiple myeloma in 1994, and after a few years of unsuccessful traditional treatment, he turned to Dr. Brzezinski for anti-neoplastin therapy from November 1997 to April 1999. He has been cancer-free since then. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, David, and I look forward to hearing about your cancer journey and foundation. Now, you were diagnosed in 1994, and I want to congratulate you for this long-term survival. What was your diagnosis, and what symptoms did you have at that time?
First, let me say hi, Carl.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me on. You're correct. I was diagnosed with multiple myeloma, an incurable blood cancer, cousins with leukemia and lymphoma. In early 1994, I underwent several years of conventional therapies, including induction therapy and an autologous stem cell transplant in December of 95. I experienced remission, relapse, which is sort of the norm for myeloma patients. Unfortunately for me, my remissions, the time in between remission and relapse, was quite short. My first remission was only about 10 months, and my second remission was only another 9 months. So by the fall of 97, my oncologist essentially said, there's nothing more we can do for you.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I would like to say. I was courageous and knowledgeable and began researching and underwent anti-neoplastin therapy at the Brzezinski Clinic. But mm-hmm. really, I was pushed mm-hmm. to go find something. At 36, I was otherwise healthy. I had a very difficult time thinking there was nothing else I could do.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to give credit. It was actually my wife, who's far more tech savvy than I am. It was Dawn that found mm-hmm. The Brzezinski Clinic, the website on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
And in 1997, the internet was a fraction of what it is nowadays.
Right.
But I found it. I did not want to go to Tijuana or Germany or Switzerland. The clinic is in Houston, Texas. Went down, had an appointment. Within a few days, I had begun anti-neoplastin therapy. For the next 7 months, I underwent the intravenous version of anti-neoplastin therapy. And we can talk about, if you choose, if you'd like to,
right.
We can talk about the pros and cons with that.
Yeah, well, as you can tell us about Dr. Brzezinski's treatment, because I haven't interviewed anyone before that has been treated by him. I've got an article on his treatment on the Cancer Foundation, but I haven't talked with anyone that has actually had the treatment. So anything you can share will be great.
I can do that. And in fact, many cancer coaching clients who simply want to talk about anti-neoplastin therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, so I'll go through what I view as both the strengths and the weaknesses, the pros and cons.
Mm-hmm.
Do you care if I do the good news or the bad news first?
Doesn't matter.
Okay. The good news is that I can speak personally. I'm not an oncologist, so it's impossible for me to talk about purely the science. But personally, I went from end-stage myeloma. Multiple myeloma is considered to be an incurable blood cancer by conventional oncology. So I went from several years of chemo and radiation side effects to there's nothing more we can do for you,
mm-hmm.
7 months of anti-neoplastin therapy and another 10 months, to which my lesions. With blood cancers in the bone, you don't talk about solid tumors, you talk about lesions. I had probably a dozen different lesions throughout my body. They all healed, closed, and essentially I went into complete remission by the beginning of 99, where I have remained since.
Mm-hmm.
So without controversy, without a doubt, we can agree that anti-neoplastin therapy helped me greatly. So that's the good news. The bad news is that it's essentially out of pocket.
Mm-hmm.
Mom and dad helped me afford the therapy over mm-hmm. the 17-month period. Brzezinski is probably the most controversial guy, medical doctor, oncologist, that I've ever heard of. I'm fond of telling clients that my brother-in-law is a hematologist-oncologist. He's probably one of the most sensitive, well-educated, thoughtful guys I know. But when it comes to talking about Stanislaw Brzezinski and the Brzezinski Research Institute, we just mm-hmm. it's like we're talking two different languages. So I don't know what to say about that, other than I speak based on my own experience.
Mm-hmm.
There's my experience, and there was a, let me also say, it was in 97 through 99. I'm pretty sure that the clinic has changed. The FDA is constantly on Brzezinski. The Texas Medical Board, the state of Texas, is constantly trying to shut him down. I don't understand why he's so controversial. To me, it's largely an issue of medical freedom. I don't want to get into politics mm-hmm. necessarily,
mm-hmm.
But it was my choice. I had tried every form of conventional therapy there was, chemo, radiation, a dozen different types of chemotherapy.
Mm-hmm.
None of them worked. I did this therapy. It worked. So that's, mm-hmm. I think Americans should be able to make choices for themselves.
Right.
So that's my spiel about Brzezinski. Feel free to ask any questions you want.
Well, did you have day there for a period?
Actually, that's a very good question. In the beginning, yes. I would say in my case, 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
The norm is 2 weeks. Essentially, Brzezinski or the technicians at the clinic teach you, the patient, how to be your own nurse.
Mm-hmm.
And I say that meaning you'll take a month's worth of antineoplastin therapy home with you. And my wife and I would had a little pantry off of the kitchen where we kept all of our medical supplies. And when I say medical supplies, I mean I had a port. People who undergo chemotherapy understand what a port is. So we would prepare my 2 10-hour infusions daily. So you drain the port, you clean it, you keep your tubes clean. All that to say, I'm at home. I do this. My wife helped me with it.
Mm-hmm.
And I would lead a normal life. I had a picture of fanny pack turned around in the front with my antineoplastin, with my 10-hour dose, my little programmable pump, and the stuff would just pump into me mm-hmm. throughout the next 10 hours. I would then get 4 hours off, a little vacation, take a shower, exercise, take a sauna, all that stuff,
mm-hmm.
then do another 10-hour infusion. Do that for the month. I would take, I had an oncologist here in Cleveland that would meet with me once a month, that would do blood work, that would take MRI scans. I would then go down to the clinic every month. We would examine how I was doing, my health, my blood, my lesions, and they slowly shrank over the next, I want to say about 15 months. The reason why I stopped was because I had healed. I was fine. There is an expense. I was running out of money.
Mm-hmm.
So I, frankly, I simply turned, Dr. Brzezinski himself didn't handle me. He mm-hmm. has very few patients.
Oh.
There are about 20 different doctors at mm-hmm. the clinic, each of whom have their own patients. Mm-hmm. So I turned to my doctor, Dr. Basil, and said, okay, doc, I'm running out of money. It's time to move on. And, you know, reluctantly, he knew that the therapy was working, and he mm-hmm. didn't want me to stop, but he understood mm-hmm. it had been a year and a half, so it was time to...
Well, were you able to continue the infusions, to get those and continue without seeing someone, or did that end the infusions?
The first 10 months was the liquid form of antineoplastin therapies.
Mm-hmm.
The 7 month following was a capsule form. So I did the infusions for 10 months.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, it is more expensive. It's about 4 times more expensive than the capsules. And it's a lot more work every day to manage your own, my wife and I,
mm-hmm.
manage your own infusions.
Mm-hmm.
So that when I say I got off, after 10 months, I stopped the infusion portion. And the seven months following were capsule.
Mm-hmm.
It was much easier for me to take mm-hmm. capsules of antineoplastin therapy throughout the day mm-hmm. than it was the intravenous stuff.
So you did continue then the capsules?
Yes.
Even though you weren't seeing anyone at the clinic, but you continued the capsules. Am I correct?
I saw once a month. I went down to Houston to check in with the clinic and to everyone. They want to manage your bloods. They want to figure out. It's essentially keeping an eye on you. And both my oncologist here in Cleveland, as well as once a month, going down to Houston. So it's an outpatient form of therapy day in, day out here in Cleveland. But as I say, two appointments monthly, one with an oncologist here, one with the oncologist in Houston.
But then after the 10 months and 7 months, is that when you then discontinued?
Yes. As I say, I ran out of money. Mm-hmm. I was to some degree ready to move on with my life. Mm-hmm. My son was born shortly after that. Mm-hmm. But I will say, and it's important, those of us with multiple myeloma, because it's considered an incurable cancer, mm-hmm. everyone relapsed. So then I move into the stage of, gee, I'm going to relapse. Mm-hmm. Will it be 3 years, 5 years? And I was genuinely, it's always in the back of your mind. You wake up from bed, and you have a pain in the back, like many people. Uh-oh, I've relapsed. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, I never have.
Mm-hmm. Great. Good.
Yes.
Now, David, did he have you on a special diet during that 17 months?
In a word, no. In the late 90s and I want to say moving into the 2000s, there was still very little discussion of what I consider either complementary or integrative therapies. Brzezinski, in general, I found, and Dr. Basil as well, mm-hmm. was very much in favor of anything I would do to remain healthy, mm-hmm. diet, mm-hmm. exercise. But there was no specific discussion of X diet, X foods. Mm-hmm. All of that I ended up researching on my own, and slowly over, mm-hmm. when I talk about this period of worrying about relapsing, mm-hmm. I learned to sort of live what I consider to be an anti-cancer lifestyle. Probably things, Carl, that you take for granted, mm-hmm. Obviously we're 20 years later, mm-hmm. And most cancer survivors now understand the importance of diet, mm-hmm. Exercise, hydration, juicing, those kinds of things. It was still quite new. And also the internet, as I say, was barely what it is nowadays. So the notion of trying to learn about your own cancer, learn about your side effects, was just really, back in those days, you still had to go to the library mm-hmm. to look up books on the subject. Nowadays, a growing population are turning to their computers or their tablets or laptops and simply searching.
And don't even know what the library is.
that's my son, who just went to college. It was all about internet search and less about library mm-hmm. research. But as long as people are doing research, that's the important thing. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because you know, back in the 80s and 90s, all the cancer patient could rely on is his or her doctor. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm not casting aspersions on clinical oncology, but they're somewhat limited,
right,
in my
right.
opinion.
Right. Except mine. Mine was very unusual because mine included diet. I was on a vegan diet in 1974. Can you imagine that? Fruit, vegetables, grains, and nuts. Limited grains. No peanut because they were high protein. And, you know, I had no protein. It was fruit, nuts, grains, and vegetables. Fruit, vegetables. And 75% raw, and then I could have cooked beyond that. And I think that was very progressive for 1974. There was a lot of things that my doctor prescribed that was very progressive. But unfortunately, he was very good at all the physical, but there was no mental spiritual. That was all done on my own. And I know you're very much into holism. And did you do holism, a holistic approach at the time you were with Dr. Brzezinski, or is that something that evolved after, or when did that come about?
During Brzezinski, no. At the time, again, I was very much focused. Frankly, I was shocked that I responded so positively.
Mm-hmm.
And as I mentioned, I stopped the therapy. Then, again, we're talking maybe 2001, 2003. I'm beginning to research more. I'm beginning to learn more. So learning about evidence-based mm-hmm. spirituality, that bona fide therapy in and of itself, but also nutrition, foods, supplements, bone health, mm-hmm. Exercise. It was surprising to me, to say the least, that my oncologist didn't talk about any of these things.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not talking about controversial.
Right.
We're just talking about, I'm becoming more spiritual. Much of that was on me, mainly because there's my own performance. I'm getting better. My son's born.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking a lot about him. Will he remember me in 2 years, in 4 years? Now, of course, he just went to college, so it's a different situation now. But at the time, I really was questioning a lot and thinking through a lot.
Mm-hmm.
On the side, having gone through a high schooler who's eating junk food and having these discussions, it's not easy. Parenting
is not easy.
Just so you know. But hopefully someday he'll realize that there's a benefit to living your life in a healthy way.
Right.
So Brzezinski, I had reached remission. I was extremely thankful for that. I began to research. It was in 2004 that I realized that there were a growing population of newly diagnosed cancer patients mm-hmm. who were desperate to learn. I launched People Beating Cancer pretty much immediately as I blogged, and there's software that is pretty much that does this easily. People can read, so you search autologous stem cell transplant, or you search antineoplastin therapy, or you search Brzezinski,
mm-hmm.
and pretty much immediately you can find what I have written, and I learned that people were dying to talk to me. Excuse me, that's a bad choice mm-hmm. of word. People were eager to talk to me about Brzezinski, about my experiences.
Mm-hmm.
By then, let's say I've been in remission for 4 or 5, 6 years. So starting on the internet, it's all real time. They can write. There were some phone calls. So the site was beginning to, it becomes sort of a cancer community.
Mm-hmm.
It's online, but it's very convenient. So you can read and write on your schedule, whether that's 2 a.m. or if you're a morning person, 10 a.m. whatever. And there's no trouble with time zones or. And in fact, I work with a number of people in other English speaking countries, whether mm-hmm. they're Australian or Canadian or. So the point is reaching out and learning about all these different therapies, whether it's mind-body, spirituality, or supplementation. And in fact, we talked also a fair amount about conventional therapies as well. If, as an example, a lung cancer patient is facing some surgery, that can be an excellent start at debulking his cancer, his or her cancer, cut out the tumor. Now, I fully believe in the importance of other forms of therapy as well.
Mm-hmm.
But chances are they're diagnosed, they're trying to think through a therapy plan. Fine, let's discuss the spectrum you're facing. Your oncologist is pushing you to have surgery. Let's talk about that. There are pros and cons. Let's talk about supplements. Let's talk about spirituality. So that's where we evolved from 98 through 2000, 2002, 4, 6.
And what have you done to prevent recurrence in your own life?
You must do this a lot. That's another good question. This idea of living basically an evidence-based anti-cancer lifestyle, while I do, in the beginning, I focused mostly on my cancer, multiple myeloma.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, I've broadened into health in general, and I've mm-hmm. since learned a great deal about chronic disease in general, pain management, largely because of the side effects I sustained during my conventional therapies,
right.
95 diagnosis through 97. But I would argue that you can live, that an individual can live an anti-cancer lifestyle fairly, it's not very expensive. Yes, it's not as much fun. I used to, when I was, you know, in my teens and 20s, maybe I drank a little bit and I ate some junk food. So I no longer do that. So it's not quite the same lifestyle as it used to be. But my diet, while somewhat strict, I no longer, obviously, sugar is gone, white flour is gone, animal fat is gone, but animal protein, I enjoy some red meat. Mm-hmm. It's a lot less than it used to be, but mm-hmm. still, I enjoy that. Lots of fruits and vegetables. Frankly, I have this firm belief that once you start down this road, it gets easier.
Right.
So you cut out sugar, cut out white flour. The more fruits and vegetable I ate, the more I enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
I really look forward to that.
Mm-hmm.
Grocery stores these days, they're all good at supplying really healthy organic produce.
Right.
Almost daily, season in, season out, no matter where you live. Mm-hmm. I live in Ohio, so if we get it, I got to assume that other portions of the country get it too.
Right. We have a Whole Food and they have probably the best supply of organic fruit and vegetables in our area.
That's a great example. Granted, there are people that complain that it's a little bit expensive, but I would argue, I talked to my mom over the years. She used to shop and cook in the 60s, prepared foods, frozen foods, whereas now my wife and I, my wife is a chef, so she's very much mm-hmm. a foodie. Organic foods, fresh foods, whole foods. I don't mean the grocery store,
right.
but whole grains,
mm-hmm.
whole food. I just think that we prioritize that way of living, and I think everyone should. I just
right.
think it tastes better. It's healthier.
Well, it's also cheaper in the long run. Even though you pay more, it's cheaper in the long run because you don't need as much drugs and all that stuff when you get sick. And I used to go to, well, I still go to Trader Joe's, but I went to Trader Joe's, I went to Fresh Market, I went to Harris Teeter's, I went to the health food store. Now I go to two places and I get everything I need. And actually, it's a little bit cheaper at Whole Food than it is at the health food store or Fresh Market. So I still pay a lot of money for the organic food and all, but in the end, I believe that my health is worth it, I'm worth it, and I'm saving money in the long run.
I couldn't agree with you more. And my experience is what's referred to as anecdotal. I'm only
mm-hmm.
one guy.
Mm-hmm.
But considering all of my health challenges over the past 20 plus years,
mm-hmm.
I once I learned how to manage my health and once I understood exercise and detox, all that stuff, I see a doctor only essentially because my wife and my mother forced me to. But I haven't had a medical issue of any sort. Well, this entire time, I pay a lot for insurance. I have pre-existing illnesses,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
I do well. My wife, my son, we're very healthy again, knock on wood. I don't want to jinx it. And I think that if people live a certain way, they can certainly reduce the risks of a host of chronic diseases.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly diabetes, certainly
right.
different kinds of pain, exercise, stretching. I am a huge fan of stretching
mm-hmm.
and the importance of all of my friends have bad backs and are constantly complaining about health. But if you live a healthy lifestyle, you can minimize a host of...
Right. And I include the chiropractor. You know, if I injure my back, I can get over it faster. But you have to be very careful who you pick as your chiropractor. It has to be a really good one. And I've only found a couple in the whole area. One of them was at the Edgar Cayce. It was the Association for Search Enlightenment, which was built around Edgar Cayce. But he died, and then we have one in the area I live in now. But if I injure my back, he can adjust and do all the stuff, and I'm over it much faster than it would be otherwise.
Again, I agree with you. I was one of the side effects has to do with nerve damage, and my hips were giving me problems.
Mm-hmm.
I went to see a chiropractor. He made some adjustments. I researched and I read about exercise and how to build muscle strength and all that stuff. But I want to say six months of getting adjustments was a huge help.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, exercise, building muscle was a huge help. All to say, the person who is willing to think outside the box, I think, can manage his or her health for the long term much better.
Yeah, right. And then I think I mentioned that I consult Medical Intuitive occasionally, too. And I've used him for about 5 years, and he's fantastic. I mean, I can call him, and he will go through all the systems in my body. He'll go through all the minerals, protein, carbohydrates. He goes through everything and picks up whatever is the problem and tells me what to do about it. And he has been a lifesaver several times. And so I believe that God provided these resources, and it's just a matter of finding the right ones. The same as I think that the food is all there. The herbs are there. It's just a matter of finding the right ones. And all of this will resolve any problems that we have that we can't resolve on our own.
I don't mean to tell you what to do. What I view you're doing, you sort of intuitively discovered this.
Mm-hmm.
What I discuss with patients frequently is essentially you formed a medical team of advisors, people that give you information. You sit on top and you make decisions for you, but their educated decisions based on your medical intuitive, based on your chiropractor, based on, and in fact, I would argue that anyone, and certainly a newly diagnosed cancer patient, you have caregivers, you have an oncologist, you have team members giving you information. I think that's the best way to make informed decisions. Granted, you know, no guarantee, but if you're talking about making decisions, decisions a generation ago, just having your oncologist tell you, as opposed to now, you have different sources, much better decision making. And I think that leads to better, longer lives.
And I think because we have access to the internet, which we didn't have, you know, 30 years ago, and also because more and more people meditate and all, a lot of people are intuitive, and they use some of these resources just to validate. It's like, I'll call my medical intuitive and I'll say, you know, I think it's such and such. And he'll say, yeah, it is. And so I'm seeking validation for what I already have kind of figured out on my own, but I don't know always what to do about it. And then he will, you know, tell me what I can do that will clear a problem.
I belong to a number of different online groups for various reasons. Certainly myeloma, but other cancer side effects. One of my side effects is a mouthful. Radiation-induced lumbosacral plexopathy. That's nerve damage caused by radiation.
Oh.
But essentially, people talking to people, people asking questions, questions that might be simple, I'm experiencing this problem. Has anyone else dealt with this? What do you think? Now, the medical intuitive probably is far more educated and knows a whole lot more. But the online groups, and many of them, yes, are Facebook. Not everyone I know likes Facebook, but there's a benefit to talking to someone with your exact same problem, whether it's in your same country or a different country. And I think it's extremely helpful. I can't tell you whether it's specific therapies, could be conventional therapies, whether it's surgery, chemotherapy, side effects, or you know, chiropractic, exercise. Curcumin these days, that's a spice slash antioxidant. It's becoming it's practically a wonder drug. Now, there is something to be learned. It is somewhat complicated, but that antioxidants, nutrition, some medicine, some conventional medicine, I think that's the best way to manage your health, exactly what you're talking about.
Now, I took curcumin for years, and then when I was diagnosed with AFib, I found that it's a blood thinner. And so many of the things that I were taking, because I also was taking CranMax, which is comparable to 8 glasses of cranberry juice, in order to keep the urinary tract in shape. But so many of the things are blood thinners, and I use, as I told you, natural blood thinners, but I'm afraid of getting too much. And so I stopped the curcumin, and I've stopped some of the things that I was taking that I know were healthy. But, you know, I feel like I have to balance so I don't get too much blood thinners.
I feel the exact same way. Mm-hmm. Once I began, we talked about omega-3 fatty acids. Mm-hmm. That I view as sort of my main blood thinner.
Right.
But you're right, there's curcumin. There are some other things as well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't ever want people I talk to think that natural therapies can do anything you want.
Mm-hmm.
I do think there's some thinking and learning and some research, just what you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Taking, you know, 10 different blood thinners, you're right, might be too much.
Right, right.
So thinking, oh, somewhat of a word of caution, I guess that's all I'm saying.
Right, right.
You're correct. Again, intuitively, you figure this stuff out, but... You're right, you're correct.
Now, David, I, as you know, I've been in nursing for over 60 years, so I've seen many new disciplines evolve, and recently I've been hearing about cancer coaches and coaches, but I don't know a lot about what they do. Can you tell me a little bit about how you prepare, or how most people prepare, and then what you do, or is it different people do different things, or how does all of that work?
I know what I know, and that's purely from going on the internet and searching cancer coaches in this case.
Uh-huh.
So I don't pretend to know everything. You are correct. There are several different ways of approaching this, what has become this general term cancer coach. There are many, well, let's say an RN who chooses to specialize cancer coaching. There are even some MDs. But I read one of your, I listened to one of your MP3 files on your site, Chris Cancer. I'll give him a plug. He is, in my area, a cancer survivor who has learned a great deal about his cancer, about the world of health.
Mm-hmm.
I find into that. And in fact, I'm proud of the fact that I've survived for 23 plus years.
Right, right.
So, it's important to be very clear with any and all people who read site traffic, people who contact me. I don't pretend to be any professional of any kind. To some degree, I'm a regular guy who simply has learned a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
In that vein, all of my blog posts, all of the cancer coaching guides, I call them. I will tell you what I do and why I do it, but I'm always sure to link study.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
mm-hmm.
As you probably understand, the FDA and their clinical trials are a different level of research. A study about curcumin and myeloma, or about colorectal cancer, or enhancing a chemo, it might be. It might be in vitro. It might be in vivo. It might not be humans. It might be an epidemiological study, fish oil. So there is something to learn about what evidence-based therapy means.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't want people to think it's just me saying this is what you should do.
Right.
Me, it's my experience, and supported by studies, which is essentially why I do it. I started curcumin because of studies.
Mm-hmm.
I do omega-3 fatty acids because of studies. I exercise mainly because I feel good doing it, but also a host of studies talking about cancer in the importance of exercise.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the foundation of cancer coaching for me is experience. And for the record, I've always considered the quote-unquote expert not to be conventional oncology, but the cancer survivor, him or herself.
Mm-hmm.
They know themselves, they know chemo, they have been through it. That makes them an expert. That's only my opinion, but that's what I think.
Right.
So experience and research.
Mm-hmm.
I do think you should include your oncologist in your team, but cancer coaching to add the opinion of a cancer on studies. I just think that's important for this idea of a team advising you.
Great.
I don't know if I answered your question, but
yeah, thank you.
I tried.
And how do you locate clients, or is it word of mouth, or is there a referral system, or how does it?
In the case of People Beating Cancer, which is the name of the foundation that I launched in 2004, which is now Cancer Coaching. It's all about the internet. As we discussed earlier, I'm sad to say that healthy people don't really think in general about cancer or about preventing cancer. Mm-hmm. However, once a person is diagnosed, it's very common these days to turn to their computer and search the wonders of Google search or Yahoo search and simply type in, mention a term, lung cancer or a chemotherapy that you're considering, your oncologist is pushing dexamethasone, and you want to learn about it. So you simply type it in. I've written about 1,400 blog posts. Mm-hmm. So on the internet, it's possible you'll come upon one of my blog posts, People Beating Cancer, and you'll simply read. Then you'll begin to learn about me. You can ask me a question. You can talk for, we're talking interactively on the internet. So that's how People Beating Cancer functions.
Mm-hmm.
It's all on the internet. We don't advertise.
Mm-hmm.
Not. I do spend time, as I mentioned earlier, in these online groups. You might read. I find it helpful if someone asks a question about cancer or myeloma or chemotherapy or supplement.
Mm-hmm.
I will write about it. Chances are I'll link a study. I'll link a blog post, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's everything I do essentially is based on search. That was important to me back in when I found Brzezinski. I consider search to be the patient who wants to reach out and learn. To me, that's central to this whole process.
Mm-hmm.
And legitimately, there are people who don't want to know more than they want to talk to their oncologist. They want their oncologist to tell them exactly what to do.
Right.
That's fine.
That's old. I think we're moving more away from that, as you said earlier, to solving our own problems with the team.
You're right. And that's true. And some of this is generational. I talk a lot about my mom, 88-year-old. She just broke her hip. But the notion of searching and learning, it's a little bit foreign to her. Plus, her computer's kind of intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fine.
Right.
But I'm in my 50s, so I'm kind of the dividing line.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly, my son, teens, 20s, 30s, to them, the internet is almost ubiquitous. It's like electricity, food to the rest of us.
Right.
So, yes, this health landscape is changing. Certainly, cancer is changing.
Mm-hmm.
Cancer is so technical and so cumbersome. It very much lends itself to the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Other forms of chronic disease, rheumatoid arthritis. We talked about AFib.
Mm-hmm.
What is AFib? What helps? What therapies? It's a challenge, and at least the patient who has been told by their doctor, this is what you have. More and more people are wanting to reach out, wanting to learn. What you do with that information, because I will gladly tell everyone who asks, there's a lot of the internet, to some degree, is like the Wild West. There's a lot of people just saying stuff.
And I
certainly agree with that. And so, yes, a word of caution. Again, why I include links, studies with pretty much everything I say.
Right.
Because it's not just me.
Foundation then primarily, the goal is primarily education?
The mission of People Beating Cancer is to, it's very simple. It's to demystify cancer and chronic disease, mind, body, and soul.
Mm-hmm.
And we thought a lot about that.
Is that educational then?
It's in the beginning. It was all about education, but education in several different formats. Research is only one component, and I'll be painfully honest. A lot of these doctors and researchers write in this medical jargon that it's almost impossible for the average human. So there's the study, but there's also whether it's oncology or the experienced cancer survivor. as I say, blog posts. In there, you know, groups of people, people asking other people questions. Education in the broadest sense, learning about all of it. And learning about nutrition is very different than learning about chemotherapy side effects.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
It's almost impossible what the newly diagnosed cancer patient has to face. There's a world of negative emotional challenges.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, their oncologist is pushing them to learn about therapies. Then this cancer coach guy comes along and says, well, fine, chemo, but consider curcumin or omega-3.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot to learn.
Right.
Yes, education, but it's tough.
Yeah. Now, do you all the marketing and the fundraising and all of that, or is your board active or not? And the reason I asked, David, is that I picked my board because they had certain qualifications, like one brings in millions of dollars in fundraising. Another one is an attorney. And another one is an excellent nurse practitioner. But they're all very busy people, so they don't have any time to help me. So I talk to them an hour and a half a year at an annual meeting, and everything else is left to me. And, you know, I can only do so much between the radio show and the foundation. And so I'm wondering if you have an active board or if you handle everything.
I'm in very much a similar situation. I, too, can only do so much. I tend to focus on content, just like you.
Mm-hmm.
I do more writing and blogging, but
very
same thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't pay myself anything, frankly.
That's
but I do raise enough money for one employee. There's an assistant director.
Oh.
And she's wonderful. She handles pretty much everything I don't want to handle, from technical. And running a website, there's a fair amount involved in running a website.
Mm-hmm.
The board, everything from, in the beginning, was primarily expertise.
Mm-hmm.
The medical chair, as I mentioned, is a radiation oncologist, MD Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
And he's invaluable helping me understand really very much the conventional. When I say conventional, I mean FDA approved.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what he represents.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, he lives in Houston. So our board meetings, there are two board members that call in. Now the time frame, he's a couple hours. He has to get up early for board meetings, as does the marketing chair. But primarily expertise, we have there are two. There's about 25% of donations that come in through, and this is also where the internet is great. The spring fundraiser is essentially just me doing. I'm only telling you this because you asked. Hand cycling.
Right.
It's essentially like a bicycle that you pedal with your arm, and I do the Cleveland Marathon, and actually friends and family and donors sponsor me,
so
we raise money essentially through the internet. It's an extremely inexpensive way, cost effective way to raise money. We have one formal event, the fall fundraiser is coming up at the end of this month. We sell tickets. This year. Actually, a friend and classmate who is a best-selling author, Michael Ruhlman. We were talking about grocery stores. His most recent book is called Grocery, talking exactly about what we are talking about, nutrition and health. Wonderful book. So all to say, I do very little fundraising because you're right, it is time-consuming.
Right.
But my board members help out. They'll get their friends to buy tickets. Michael Ruhlman's a friend. He'll come speak. He'll sign book. We do as little fundraising formally as we can get away with. Cancer coaching patients sometimes do make donations well. So it's kind of a broad spectrum view of revenues. I feel your pain.
Right.
Raising money is tricky, but we believe that we do good work.
Mm-hmm.
So far, well, since 2004, we've managed to pay our bills.
Well, I believe that everything I do should be available to everyone. I grew up poor, and so I don't want anyone to be left out. And so I did, if you've looked at my website, you saw I did a long section on prevention as part of that cancer theme. And I decided that maybe I could make some money for the foundation through doing a downloadable version of that. And the downloadable version is easier because there's like 47 interview links to the content, like forgiveness. I interviewed the person that is head of the Forgiveness Project. I think he was at Stanford. Now, in the version on the website, you have to do searching because I've got it set up like interviews with cancer doctors, interviews with others who deal with cancer, interviews with survivors. And so you have to do searching, but in the download, I could put the link right there so you didn't have to do that. And I had a table of contents, but that didn't sell. So now I've done a booklet on it, thinking, well, maybe I can make money for the foundation with a booklet. But, you know, by the time I do all of those things, plus keep the radio show going and keeping the content up on and continuing the content, I don't have a lot of time for other fundraising activities. So that's why I was interested in, you know, your board and what you do as far as fundraising.
I understand exactly. I've tried many different things. Some things have failed ethically. Some things have raised a little bit of money. I too have written a couple of books. There's a tiny percentage of people who will donate formally for cancer coaching. Those people who want more of my time, so they can get it through making a donation. The vast majority of what we do is exactly like your website. It's free. You can learn a tremendous amount. You have to search. I've listened to a couple of your audio files. Very beneficial. And the notion of technology that you can, through clicking a couple of buttons, listen to an entire interview is exceptional. Again, I started this, you know, back in the 90s. None of this was available. Our decision making was just completely haphazard. So that's, I hesitate to say it's a good time to be diagnosed with cancer, but that sounds so odd. Certainly myeloma, but chemotherapies, surgery, we talked about prostate cancer. I know people who in the 80s and 90s had a prostatectomy, much worse outcomes compared to today. Not perfect, but curcumin, green tea extract, resveratrol. There's a lot more information out there.
And don't forget pomegranate.
Yes. For urinary tract issues
and prostate, right?
And issues. Again, all you have to do is type in. All you have to do is be able to spell prostate correctly, and a whole world opens.
Well, you know who told me about pomegranate was Bernie Siegel. You know,
really?
My PSA went up to 12, and they were very concerned, and so they did the biopsy, which is a horrible thing. I would never have that done again. But I talked with Bernie, and he said, well, you know, they've done research recently that shows that pomegranate will reduce the size of the prostate, and will prevent cancer, prostate cancer, and if you've got prostate cancer, it will reduce the size of the tumor. And so I took pomegranate, and in 2 months, my PSA went from 12 to 5, and in another month, it went to 4.8, I think. Mine stays a little higher than it's supposed to, but my three brothers all had elevated PSAs also, so I don't worry about it. But I did when it went up to 12. But pomegranate, and the test came back normal, but the pomegranate is very good for the prostate.
I don't want to sound too wonky here or too technical, but Carl, think about just these past few sentences that you mentioned. You mentioned certainly non-conventional evidence-based in the form of pomegranate. You mentioned also elaborate diagnostics in the form of PSA testing. The prostate, potentially the patient has learned what a 4 versus a 5 versus a 12 means. Chance and a core biopsy, which I haven't had it done, but my dad did, very painful, but can be very helpful in determining what's going on down there. So just your experience, you're combining therapies, you're learning a lot about things that would have been completely foreign even 10 years ago, 15 years ago. Now, to me, that's, I just think that's exceptional to talk about. I don't mean to make big deal out of it. But
well, the worst thing about a biopsy was when you urinate after, there's blood. If you have a bowel movement, there's blood. You know, it was all the blood after. It wasn't the pain. I mean, it was the blood that I didn't like, and I didn't know if it was ever going to stop.
I believe it. Hopefully, you only had to do it once. And
right. Well, they wanted to do it a second time, and I reminded them that they had done it previously. And so, and then it cleared up on its own. Because the PSA is so, well, an infection will knock off, will up the numbers on the PSA.
Right.
A lot of things do, and so it's not always that specific for prostate cancer.
Yes.
Because of the time, I think we better look at anything you want to talk about, David, before we look at books, services, product, and how the listeners can reach you. So is there any concluding remarks before we look at those?
I have to say, in the beginning, I had sort of an agenda. Carl, you've covered all the bases and more. I'm duly impressed that you asked all these great questions. Thank you. There's nothing in my head currently that I want to say. Sure, I'll plug People Beating Cancer, cancer coaching over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. Still, all the concepts, all the, whether it's mind, body, whatever, conventional, non-conventional, you've covered it.
Well, you've had such an interesting life, David. I mean, and you've done so many things that there was so much to talk about between the cancer and the coaching and the foundation. So it was really fun kind of coming up with questions and, you know, things to ask you about. So, and also being in holism, which is my big thing, you know, it's because I think there are more and more people that are moving in that direction, but it's not moving fast enough to suit me. And so it's always a delight to talk with someone that is into that.
I understand what you're saying. It is moving, whether it's something as simple as mindfulness, meditation, yoga, even conventional oncology is slowly, moving that in that direction. Mm-hmm. It'll happen. I understand, not fast enough, but I mentioned to you before, the mind body or the spiritual aspect, it dawned on me, I don't know, 10 years ago. I enjoy so much what I'm doing. It's this idea of being a purpose. Could it be that I had this normal life and in my 30s I'm diagnosed with cancer so that I can achieve my purpose? I know that sounds kind of odd, but that's where my spirituality has become. That's where I am now. So,
isn't it good that we have this passion? Bernie Siegel yesterday, I think it was, had something on Facebook to the effect that when you're creating, you lose track of time. And when time doesn't exist, you don't age. And Mary McManus reminded him that a few years ago, he had said that when you have passion, you lose track of time, and that you don't age when you lose track of time. And I wrote that I think it is more passion, because when I'm working on creating content for my website, or when I'm reading and learning new things that I'm going to put on there, I lose track of time. I mean, it seems like I've been working for an hour, and I look and I may have been there 5 hours. And people always guess my age as opposed to 60 instead of 85. And so I think there is something to it, but I think that it's the passion and not, well, maybe it's the creating, because when you're writing, you're also creating, and you're doing blogs and all. And so I thought that was an interesting comment, two comments, the passion and the creating. I think they both tend to stop time for us.
I can verify exactly what you're talking about. There's a psychologist named Martin Seligman, Dr. Mm-hmm. Martin Seligman.
Mm-hmm.
He's written a series of books, but in my own personal process in the beginning, I read his book about positive psychology, is essentially looking for the positive in something.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about a central concept to what his view of positive psychology, something called flow.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Very simple word, flow. But it's exactly what you're talking about, the notion of time passing when you're pursuing something that, as you say, interests you, or in the case of writing blogs and researching blogs, yes, 20 minutes, what can seem like 20 minutes is hours. Oddly, and I don't exactly know how this fits in, but a book I was reading, my son went through his period of playing video games. He, all of his friends, they too experience flow. I was reading a book about it. His passion, I'm afraid to say, is video games, or it was at least in his teens, many kids. But so it's cancer for me. It's blogging. It's cancer for you. For Martin Seligman, it's slightly different. But the concept of flow is exactly what you're talking about.
Great.
So
good.
That's
well. Then, David, would you tell us about books, products, services, and how the listeners can reach you?
Yes. People Beating Cancer. All one word, simply type in peoplebeatingcancer.org. That's the name of the foundation. That's the name of the website. Cancer coaching, as I mentioned earlier, it is overwhelming for cancer patients early in the process to try to cope with all the negative emotions, conventional, non-conventional therapies. If cancer coach can help, as we mentioned, a team advising you, that's my purpose. That's what People Beating Cancer does. Whether it's answering simple questions about the therapy I'm considering, or more, and more can be. I've been pen pals with clients for years. Some of them, everyone relies on different forms of diagnostics. You mentioned PSA. It might be M spikes. It might be something called free light chains. A lot of it has to do with blood work, blood markers. So tracking those, remission, relapse, trying to figure out next steps, therapy plans. Cancer coaching, I think, is central. I think a lot about, gee, I wish I had this when I was first diagnosed. So that's largely where I am. So peoplebeatingcancer.org, cancer coaching, there I am.
Great. Well, I appreciate this very much, David. It's been extremely interesting to me, and I know it will be to listeners, and especially those that have cancer and have questions about it. So I thank you very much.
Carl, I thank you. What you do is fabulous. I say that because I think what we do is similar.
Right.
The media might be a little bit different. But, so well done. Here's to the next 10, 20 years of what you do.
Right. Thank you.